It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, we're hearing an early recording of On Wisconsin, part of a new exhibit featuring music in the collection of UW-Madison Mills Music Library, some recordings that date back over a century. Join in on our state's role in the history of recorded sound, 800-642-1234. Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Nathan Gibson is audiovisual preservation archivist for UW-Madison General Library System and a lecturer in the Mead Witter School of Music, head curator of the exhibit called Press Play, Recorded Sound from Groove to Stream. Nate, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate. Happy to be here.
Well, we just heard that early recording of On Wisconsin by the New York Military Band. Tell us about it.
Oh, that's a good one. That is the first recording of the vocal version of On Wisconsin. And it has this really long march section at the beginning, which is often left out. But it is pretty catchy. I love it. So we have an exhibit, and that was on an Edison disc from 1915. And we have a cylinder or an Edison player, phonograph player up there in the exhibit that we can crank up and get that thing really blaring pretty loud through the Special Collections exhibit. It's pretty fun.
I understand you said that one is from 1915. Originally, it was composed in 1909. Is that right? By William Purdy?
The lyrics for it.
Lyrics for it. Oh, okay.
I think 1913 okay. is when it was originally written as a song for University of Minnesota. But Carl Beck rewrote the lyrics and was like, hey, what about Wisconsin?
How has the song changed? You know, has it changed much between now and then as you look at later recordings and later technology?
Yeah, I think people leave that beginning, that long introduction to the song out now. Usually people just want to jump right into the On Wisconsin, on, because it's pretty catchy. But it's cool to see how the technology has changed. Of course, we can do longer versions now. The longest version that you could have recorded back in 1915 would have been about 3 minutes. And so there were a lot of different versions that all came out at the same time. Victor had their own version. Columbia Records had their own version. But I particularly like the New York Military Band's version.
What are you trying to showcase with the Press Play exhibit?
Oh, there's a lot of things we're trying to showcase. I think first and foremost, it's an opportunity to highlight the different collections in Mills Music Library and specifically the Wisconsin Music Archives, because a lot of those collections are not browsable. So folks may not know that we have a lot of this cool stuff. So it's an opportunity to showcase that. It's also an opportunity to talk about what archives do and the function of archives and how we're not just preserving material, but how we're to use your recent donor Tom's word, sustaining it, engaging folks in these traditions and sustaining them, and hiring musician in residence or streaming songs online so that we're not trying to preserve things exactly as they are, but keep them active, keep them in the community.
So the Press Play exhibit includes Rex Trailer with a record advertising Wisconsin-made Hamilton washing machines.
Well, the folks that rode in the prairie schooners were real pioneers in this great country of ours. They took the first big step to improve things. And ever since then, inventors and scientists have worked to make our lives easier. And Hamilton, the folks I'm mighty proud to be associated with, were pioneers too, bringing your mom automatic wash days. Washers and dryers that do all the work for her. And that's a far cry from the old wooden tubs and back-breaking scrubbing boards that the women folk of yesterday used. And that's one of the reasons I rode down to see you today.
So who was Rex Trailer, and why did you include this recording?
I love that recording. Just the idea that you would get a television children's cowboy show host to pitch automatic washing machines. Brilliant. But I have this record in because Rex Trailer was my undergraduate advisor at Emerson College, and he was the one who introduced me to music as I was just sort of learning about country music and learning. I would back him up at his personal appearances. And this recording, I never at all thought that I could include it in the Press Play exhibit. He was based out of Boston, Massachusetts for Philadelphia first and then Boston, Massachusetts for his entire career. But it turns out Hamilton Washers were from Two Rivers, Wisconsin, and they hired a New England television cowboy to be their spokesperson, which I just thought was great. And they made these cardboard records that he would then give out to all the kids on his Saturday morning 3-hour show. And they would have to take the records home and play them for their mom and try to get them to buy a washing machine. And so there's, I think that's the only one that I've ever seen left in the world. That is the last remaining cardboard record of Rex Traylor pitching Hamilton washing machines. And I just love it so much.
What a story. We have UW Audiovisual Preservation Archivist Nate Gibson here, our tour guide through the Mills Music Library collections. Join in on Wisconsin's Deep Music Archives, The Future of Preserving Sound, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show. There's more conversation ahead here on the Ideas Network. Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're sampling Who Runs This Mother, the 1990 dance track by Madison rap group Fresh Force. It's part of our journey through the music archives culled from UW-Madison Mills Music Library, spans more than a century. Join in on Wisconsin's music recording history, 800-642-1234. UW Preservation Archivist Nate Gibson, curator of the exhibit called Press Play, on display at the UW Memorial Library Special Collection, stays with us. Oh my goodness, Nate. So tell us about Fresh Force and why you included this track.
Oh man, that's a jam. Well, there's a lot of reasons to include it. Fresh Force was Madison's first hip hop group, and they started recording in the early 80s at Smart Studios and made some really cool tunes. But I included this one particularly because it's an exhibit on the 12-inch single format, or a case about that. And so throughout the whole exhibit, it's chronological, talking about each format and the things that were specific for that. And the 12-inch single, which really emerged in the late 70s with disco music, really kept vinyl going throughout the 80s and 90s as cassettes became popular and CDs became popular. The dance scene is really what kept vinyl pressing plants in business. And it was an incredibly important innovation to make 12-inch singles because you could have louder bass and you could have louder records and you could have longer records. And sort of the evolution of dance music was tied directly to that format. But also, Fresh Force is great. And I'm just glad to showcase some of our collections. That 7-inch that they did for Boat Records is super cool, too. But we could not include everything. Had to make some very hard decisions. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure they got included in the exhibit. I'm glad we got to play them today, too.
I am, too. Let's take a call now. Chris in Milwaukee is with us. Chris, hi. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm 92 years old. I've listened to WHA since I was 6 years old. And my mother got an FM radio for our little school so we could all listen to all of the wonderful programs that were on. But I have, when I was in school, I was a friend of Sherry Abrams and Carl Schmidt, who were readers on WHA. And Sherry Abrams gave me his radio that he got from the station, the first one they used. It was, I think, an RCA. It was a kind of a gray shell box. And you turn the dial, but I kept that radio, and I've kept it all of these years in the attic of the garage. And I just thought maybe in collecting all of the music records, you might want to have this radio. It's authentic.
Oh, Chris, thank you for sharing that story and sharing about WHA. Nate, what impact did RCA radios have on the music scene?
Oh, RCA radios were incredibly important. We do have a case that kind of showcases RCA, but not for their radios, but for the record players that they were promoting. March 31st of 1949, they debuted the 45 RPM format, which was a competitor to Columbia Records' long-playing 33 RPM record. And so RCA played an incredibly profound role in the development of records. Mm-hmm. But particularly, I think their greatest contribution came in the 45 format and the singles. And so we have a whole case about the different colors. When 45 records first came out, they were color coded by genre. So country were green and blues records were orange or cerise. Pop records were blue. It's kind of cool to see that. But those RCA records are beautiful. And thank you indeed for calling in and telling us about it.
I love it. Yes. And, you know, just how you can must be very immersive to walk through this exhibit and listen to the music and look at all of the artifacts. Nate Gibson curated a showcase of Wisconsin Music Archives, samples of the collection found in the UW-Mills Music Library. It's all coming together in this Press Play exhibit, runs through mid-December. Join in 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show. There's more conversation ahead on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're listening to a recording from 1920 of Otto Rindlisbacher and Carl Hope, and we're taking a tour through the history of recorded music. Nate Gibson, curator of Press Play and online playlists, giving us a sampling of what is in UW-Madison's Mills Music Library. Join in on Wisconsin Music Archives and Collections, 800-642-1234. And Nate stays with us. Well, you know, what happened there with Otto Rindlisbacher and Carl Hope? What can you tell us about them?
Well, that's one of the coolest records. We have at Mills and in our special collections, approximately 500,000 items. And one of the things that we really focus on in our collecting mission is music of the Upper Midwest, and particularly strong points of ethnic music of the Upper Midwest. And so all of the different immigrant groups that came here throughout the early half of the 20th century, a lot of record companies recorded that. But after World War II, there was sort of this diminished emphasis on recording ethnic music. But we have lots of collections and a lot of I don't want to give a number. We have a huge number of 78s that are within that ethnic music realm, and we're streaming them online as part of a Local Centers Global Sounds initiative. And that is one of our Local Centers Global Sounds 78s, Otto Rindlisbacher and Carl were from up there in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, and they recorded for the Helvetia Records Company. So they actually made those recordings in New York, but they were released on a record label from Monroe, Wisconsin. It was from 1920 to 1924. It was the first record label run by an immigrant for his community. And so he was doing lots of Swiss music and importing Swiss music, and then started this record label. And a lot of the recording, Jim Leary, Professor Emeritus, did a project about this record label and used a lot of our recordings for the source recordings for the project. And it was Grammy nominated for liner notes. And I just really wanted to showcase that, to both showcase Jim's great work, but also to showcase Otto and Carl's great playing, accordion and fiddle duet. Really fun stuff.
How do people interact with the Press Play exhibit? How do you go through it?
There is a map up there. So when you walk in, there's a paper map that you can guide yourself case 1 through 20 and go through a chronological history of the recorded format medium, starting with The earliest recording we have is 1896, but sort of backing it up earlier than that with books and recordings of tinfoil recordings, all the way up until the streaming era. And we have press play icons. And since you can't reach through the case and press play, we have QR codes that you could scan so you can listen on your phone, or there's a listening station if you want to hear specific examples from each case. And we really tried to emphasize Wisconsin collections and some of our special collections as the examples for each format.
Let's hear some more music. The exhibit includes Running Bear by the Chieftones. So, Nate, who were the Chieftones?
Oh, the Chieftones were great. They were billed as Canada's all-Indian band. They were part of the Tsimshian Indian Nation in Canada, and right around the early 60s, I guess it would have been 63 or so, when they moved to Richland Center, just west of Richland Center in Wisconsin. And so they made these recordings while they were in Wisconsin at Kuka Records, and they also recorded for the Claremont Records label. And they had some success here as a rock band. I think people in Richland Center remember them for a lot of the animals they had on their farm, and they had a pet lion that they kept. And it was a really interesting group. They were really great. And they ended up moving from Wisconsin to Nashville in the late 60s. And found some success. They had some chart records in the Billboard Top 100 as they renamed themselves Billy Thundercloud and the Chieftones. And I really like that record because it was Running Bear, which was a number one hit written by the Big Bopper, J.P. Richardson. And it was a number one hit for Johnny Preston. But it's sort of this sad teenage love story. And I really love that the Chieftones took it on and sort of made it their own. And it's a really cool record. So I was just glad to include that. The 45 format is that record was never released or reissued on LP or CD. And so to hear it, you have to have the 45. And that's become a recent collecting initiative of the Wisconsin Music Archives, is to focus on 45s from late 40s up through the 70s and 80s.
Oh, fascinating. Nate Gibson with us, archivist, musician, curated press play, recorded sound from groove to stream, an exhibit open at UW-Madison Mills Music Library. You can join in 800-642-1234. Moving on to this song by Raylene and the Blue Angels from Oshkosh. Understand you have a personal connection here.
Oh, Raylene is so great. That was Raylene Bartel, and she was rocking. Man, what a record. That was recorded on Kuka Records in the mid-60s. I believe 1966 was the year of that one. And I found out through my friend Andy Hemrich that Raylene still was performing around the Madison area up until 2020. And I went to, just before the pandemic, I went to see her in Sun Prairie, and she was still doing the 50s and 60s classic rock and roll. And when I found out she was playing, I called Jim Kirchstein, who started Kuka Records, who made that record we just heard. And we went out to see Raylene perform this song and others. And in the middle of the song, she ran up and grabbed Jim Kirchstein up, and they started dancing on the dance floor. And it was just an absolutely incredible moment. Because they hadn't seen each other since that recording was made back in the 60s. But sadly, she passed away in 2020, just as the pandemic was kicking in. And so, yeah, I dedicate that to Raylene. She had a band called the Dairylanders, and they would record polka and country songs. And this was the Blue Angels, the rock and roll side of the same band, just different name.
I love that story. Her music lives on. What do you hope people take away from the press play exhibit?
I hope people, there's a lot of things to take away, but I hope people question what it means to archive things and how we provide access to collections, and what the future of recorded sound will even look like when things like, you know, we have streaming services now, but if those streaming services go away, how do we preserve that music? We can't keep it on our servers, and we can't provide access once it's gone. So without physical formats, I want people to think about the importance of each format, how music has changed, and what will the future look like as we keep evolving and music keeps changing. And yeah, but I also hope people take away the fact that Wisconsin had some incredible music and played such a profound role in the formative years of the recording industry.
I would imagine that as you put this exhibit together, it was, first of all, very hard for you to decide what songs to include, but you probably also encountered a lot of surprises along the way, things you didn't even know as you dug more deeply into a particular song. Was that the case?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have, there's about 300 specific items through the cases, and I really wanted to focus on so many of our collections. You want to have things from Kooka Records. You want to have things from Paramount Records. You want to have the Richard Davis collection and the Coney Island collection and all of these collections and Full Compass collection and everything. But we weren't able to include everything. So that was a lot of difficult decisions made, but so many really fun discoveries. And it was a team effort. The entire Mills Music Library staff was working on it. The Mills Library head, Jeanette Casey, librarians Tom Caw and Matt Appleby, and our library services assistant, John Oldham, really all contributed to this project. And we were just digging all summer, looking for the coolest stuff in our collections that we could showcase. A total blast.
It's like mining for gold in a way. And I would imagine you have a better understanding now, really, what is in the archives and what the holdings fully entail.
Absolutely. It was really an immersive experience, and just it definitely gave us all a better understanding of what we have and finding things we didn't even know. One of the coolest things in there was finding Dave Dudley, who was from Wisconsin and a great country music performer in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, who had a big hits like 6 Days on the Road. I found his first ever recording that was never released on a test pressing from Foul Records. And I didn't even know it was in there. And I heard it and I digitized it, and it's part of the exhibit, so you can hear it when you're going to the exhibit. But I just, finding stuff like that is just real treasure, real gold, as you say.
You digitized it, and that too helps it live on until we don't know what that next sound recording archival technology will be. How do you think about that future and preservation?
Yeah, it's important to, we're really, I think, kind of innovative in that we are providing a lot of streaming access to our collections. So under a fair use clause, we can stream thousands of 78s, which is pretty great, from our ethnic music collection in the local center's Global Sounds. And we hired a musician in residence, Beth Rado, who came and worked with our collections and then learned the songs and played them, started a Scandinavian old time dance ensemble and taught the songs to the community, and then put in hundreds of pages of notes about each song, really engage with the collections. And so we're trying to find new ways to not just digitize and preserve the sound and put it on a server, but once it gets on the server and it's preserved, that we can then engage an audience with it, and how we can keep people interested in interacting with the music.
Nate, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. This has been our true joy.
Nate Gibson is audiovisual preservation archivist for UW-Madison's General Library System and head curator of the exhibit called Press Play, Recorded Sound from Groove to Stream, on display through December 22nd at the UW Memorial Library. We have a link at wpr.org/mornings. It is the morning show on the Ideas Network.